Ready to order. Welcome, everyone. This is our last day, our last official day in Senate Judiciary.
Woo-hoo.
We will all wear black armbands after this day. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2156. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2156 would ratify the National Crime Prevention and Privacy Compact. We heard about this earlier this week, and basically the ratification has no practical effect on the way Oregon does business, and it's basically a non-criminal exchange of criminal history records, and it doesn't have a practical effect on the way Oregon currently does that, but it gives the state a seat at the table as far as compact issues when those are discussed and modified.
Thank you very much. And I, Mr. Yandell and his staff were very kind to come over to my office yesterday, where we had a conference call with the FBI, and I found out that our state police have been entirely too modest, that we have been part of a pilot program for the National Fingerprint File since 1994 and are regarded nationally as a leader in this area. This compact will actually open the door for some assistance for these efforts from the federal level, and I personally think this is a very good a good bill we have in front of us. So, Senator Walker, are there any other questions of council or whatever? Senator Walker.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2156 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2156 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry this. Now we will open a
just get Heidi's out. Just get Heidi's.
Yeah, let's just get Heidi's out. Yes. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2224, the last bill on our agenda, which was carried over from yesterday's council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2224 is the bill that would require the appellate court, after reversing some but not all counts on an appeal of a felony, to remand the case to the trial court for resentencing on the remaining counts. There is an amendment. It is the Dash A2 amendment for your consideration, and that, of course, just makes this applicable to felonies.
Okay. With the addition of the Dash 2 amendment, maybe I'm comfortable. I wanted to think about this bill overnight, and I'm comfortable with it, but I would welcome any discussion from other committee members. We have Mr. Questner in the audience, if anybody has any question.
Here.
Senator Pazanski.
If Mr. Fussman could come up, I did have a question for him since I had to leave yesterday.
That's correct. I remember that now. Mr. Fussman, thank you.
I apologize for not being able to stay yesterday while you were giving the rest of your testimony. I did want to ask you, the example that I heard you were describing is if you had a four-count sentencing occurring, the first count being the major one, and if that one was overturned. I'd like to ask you what the scenario would be or what the outcome might be if you had four counts and it was one of the other ones, not the primary one, that was actually overturned, as to how you think that would play out.
Senator Pozanski and members of the committee, Jonathan Fussner from the Department of Justice. Senator, I think that it's often difficult to know exactly how these things play out because of the complexity of the guidelines. But if you had, say, four counts and they were imposed consecutively, and you had no departure sentences on any of those, just four consecutive sentences, if one of those sentences dropped out on appeal, upon resentencing, it would be possible for the court to impose a departure sentence on another count that had not been a departure before, and thereby arrive back at the same overall total sentence, if the court wanted to do that. There are certainly nothing in this bill that would require that. If I could give perhaps another different example, you might have four counts, two of which were sentenced concurrently and the other two consecutively. If one of the two consecutive ones dropped out, the whole ball of wax goes back to the trial judge for resentencing, and the judge chooses to run the three remaining counts all consecutively at that point. Again, it would provide the flexibility for the judge to be able to do that. But again, it doesn't require the judge.
Regarding the situation that, if I remember correctly, the example you gave yesterday, you were talking about four charges that were reached conviction and they were sentencing one at a time, and subsequent to each other, and they were going up in the grid. Would that still be the same if it was four counts arising out of the same incident? And in other words, there are four separate charges, but it was out of the same incident as compared to being four separate instances.
Yeah. Chair Burdick and Senator Prozanski, if the
four counts arise out of the same
criminal episode, then the what we call the Miller-Buchholz rule does not apply, and the criminal history score does not get bumped up. If they are from separate criminal episodes, that's when you increase the criminal history score before sentencing each successive count.
Right. Thank you. Madam Chair, I just want to put that on the record because it's my understanding that what we were being told yesterday in the first example, and I'm not sure if you went over these after I left, is that you do have a different sentencing structure. If they're separate episodes, they are considered separate and distinct from each other, right, as compared to if they're in one, you don't have this bumping up.
Correct, and I think that was one of the points that was persuasive to me, along with just the notion of having some judicial discretion on these issues. Are there other questions for Mr. Fussner? Okay, we will. We are in work session, and we have a dash two amendment.
I will move the dash two amendment to House Bill 2224.
Senator Walker has moved the dash two amendment to House Bill 2224. Is there any discussion? The dash A2 amendment. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I will now move House Bill 2224 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2224 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Prozanski, would you carry that? Thank you. Okay, now we have here Representative Butler on House Bill 3352. We will open a work session on House Bill 3352. Council.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, House Bill 3352 provides that a decedent's surviving parent may not inherit by intestacy if the parent deserted or neglected the child for a period of 10 years or more before the decedent attained 18 years of age. The purpose of this bill is to stop what would maybe be considered deadbeat parents from inheriting under the laws of intestacy. This bill was before the committee 2 days ago, and during that hearing, an issue came up regarding the standards that were used specifically as set out in the dash A5 amendments. Under the current bill, as it came over the Angrus bill, that bill provided that a parent that provided no support for the decedent could not inherit under intestacy laws. A change was made to that because the no support standard is, one, hard for the, I guess, the person to show, because if the parent provided any support, even if it was de minimis, then that parent could theoretically inherit. So in the A5 amendments, the standard was changed using terms borrowed from a statute, ORS 109.324, specifically the standard of desertion or willful neglect. Senator Prozanski raised the issue whether there should be a reference to that statute. After conferring with the individuals who proposed the change language, they determined that it's not a necessary nor desirable to make a reference to that statute. One, because that statute does not specifically define those terms. It uses them, and then there's been judicial construction. So the idea is using the same terms that would be construed the same way if there was to be judicial construction on this bill. Second, it's
not exactly related. It's regarding adoption. So if that statute was changed
and there was a reference in this bill to that statute, it may not be desirable to have any changes that were made in that statute. So I think it would be better for everybody involved that made this change thought it would be better to leave the terms as they were, not make a reference to the statute.
Thank you. Does that satisfy your concerns?
It does. I just want to make sure we have stuff on the record, so if someone's looking at it. So basically what we are anticipating, if the court was ever looking at how to define that term, that they would look at that statute as it has been defined in that context and would apply that definition or structural statutory construction into this statute.
That's correct, Senator Pozanski.
I'm fine.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Butler, did you have anything to add to that?
Thank you, Senator. Chair Brudyk, I think that staff has done an excellent job in clarifying that the standard for desertion and willful neglect would be the standard that the court would use in determining in effect as prescribed here in determining the amount of support or contact with the decedent's parents or the decedent's surviving parent.
Thank you very much. And the better late than never department, if you could identify yourself.
Tom Butler, House District 60. I'm doing it again. Thank you.
He's new at this.
I tricked you on that, Representative Butler. I went right into questioning, so my apologies. Okay.
Dash 5, Senator Walker. All right. Madam Chair, I move the dash A5 amendment to House Bill 3352.
Senator Walker has moved the dash A5 amendment to House Bill 3352. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I will move House Bill 3352 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 3352 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Ringo, would you like to carry that?
Sure.
We would have Representative Butler carry it, but he's in the other chamber. Thank you very much. Okay, now we're going to, I think we have the right people in the room here. At least the last I saw, we did. The water bill, which one is the water bill? Where is it?
599.
Open a work. Okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2599 and continue our struggle in this area. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2599. The original bill, as you may recall from our discussions earlier this week, would have exempted from public disclosure information about customers held by a public body that provides sewer, water, and other certain specified utilities. We heard that would have brought the public services into line with similar private companies. There are three amendments, I believe, that are up for consideration today. Originally, we had the dash A4 amendment, which was a gut and stuff. The dash A4 amendment is now the dash A8 amendment without the replaces the bill type language. So the dash A8 amendment would allow law enforcement agencies to disclose to authorized treatment providers child abuse records. There is a dash A6 amendment which would clarify the limitations on the disclosure of a child abuse mandatory reporter's name and other identifying information. And the dash A7 amendment directly deals with the original A engrossed version of the bill and basically states that the utility or district may release personally identifiable information except for social security numbers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Committee, after talking to some friends of mine in the press and and others. I thought it's been unclear. It's late in the session, and it was unclear to me what the laws actually are for the other related water districts, and I think this is something I'd like to run into the interim as far as the content of the bill is concerned. I am definitely willing to go along with the exemption for Social Security numbers. I don't think anyone would have an argument with that in the short term. And then as far as the global issue, I would like some more time to consider that. So that's where the A7 amendment came. It narrowed the scope of the original bill to just include Social Security numbers, which they can't release.
Madam Chair, could we have counsel tell us what would actually still be able to be released since it's only limited to Social Security numbers?
Correct. Counsel?
Senator Pozanski and members of the committee, I believe that the name, the address, probably a phone number, and potentially any other, I don't know for certain if a driver's license number is kept on file, but if it is, then obviously not being specifically accepted here, I would believe the driver's license number would also be.
I can't imagine people getting driver's license. If a driver's license had occurred to me, I certainly would have done it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Signed up for water and sewer service a week ago, and they required my driver's license number.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm doing one at a time, Senator Locke. I'm starting out with the original content of the bill. I think what I might recommend is that we, I'm definitely willing to go farther in terms of a driver's license and for the moment. It's the last day of judiciary. I just as soon move this bill today and just, you know, refer the issue of the driver's license over to the Rules Committee and encourage them to give that further relief to the sponsors. Senator Pozanski.
Do you know, I don't know if you have any conversation with, I guess this would probably go back to House Judiciary for concurrence or non-concurrence?
Either that or state and federal would be my guess.
I should go back. I mean, it came out of House Judiciary is what I'm assuming. So if that's the case, I'm wondering if there would be any way we could actually have a non-concurrence and have that added into it.
That's actually a good idea. I could discuss that with Representative Krieger. That would be another way of doing the...
I would be comfortable going forward with that understanding because I think that the DL is one of those identifiers that we must address.
Yeah.
And the others, I mean, I still have reservation as to the other information being that specific as to name, mm-hmm. telephone number, knowing what some people may do with that information, and even if it was just reporting that they're in violation of using too much water, they may, you know, it's...
The vaunted water hog story. Well, actually, that's a very good suggestion, and I'm sure that will... I can't imagine that would be a problem in the House. Frankly, the issue of the driver's license extends far beyond the water districts that we're talking about. It extends to other agencies as well. So if the committee is amenable and the Dash A8 amendment does what we committed to Department of Corrections to do, and I don't believe there is controversy about that, and then the Dash 6 amendment, Senator Walker, perhaps you could elaborate for us on what the Dash 6 is.
Madam Chair, before you leave the A7s, I don't want you to infer that my silence has been that I'm going to support the A7s. I do not support the A7s. I like the bill as it came over, and that's the bill I will support moving on. I think none of this information should be given out. I don't have the issue of water hogging, and so I just want to be clear that when you ask for a motion, I'm not going to support the A7 amendments.
Let me stand corrected, because misremembered. The original bill would take all that identification out.
Mm-hmm. Senator Pozanski, that is correct.
Madam Chair, I'm going to retract what I said. I feel more comfortable with that, knowing that where we're at. I just don't think that we should be providing this stuff out. I mean, with identity theft and everything, I forgot that we were that was actually in the original bill.
Yeah, it had. It was pretty comprehensive on everything, and for the people who have been in Portland, they've done some stories in Portland on water hogging, and they do get they do get this information from the Portland Water Bureau. And
didn't we have testimony that the municipal do not give it out?
That's what I was talking about with the confusion. That we did have that testimony, and I talked to the publisher of the editor of Willamette Week, and was told that that information was readily available. So the information is a little inconclusive. It's late in the session. I'm definitely willing to go the step of Social Security number and driver's license. Because really you can't steal anybody's identity with just a name and address, I don't think. Unless you can get their address to go pick up their recycling or something.
Thank you.
Yeah, tender with it.
I support the original bill. I think it's a good consumer protection bill. I think that anything we do to it weakens it. And my support is for the original bill.
Okay. We have a bit of a problem because the bill is also being used to make a very important change for the Department of Corrections. So we'll have to weigh that.
Which amendment is that one?
That's the A8. We have people from Department of Corrections who...
Madam Chair, I received word from the Department of Corrections that the amendment is sort of being attributed to them, although it's really the state sex offender network, supervisors network that advanced that, and certainly Mr. Taylor from the Department of Corrections was one of those people who testified in support of that. Mr. Schreiner was the other person. I don't... see either one of them here, but Ms. Peters is here and can probably address the A8 amendment as well if the committee needs to hear additional information about that.
No, it's too complicated. I'm going to do it here and then do it in conference. Krieger will be fine. Thank you. Okay. Why don't we start the discussion because we need to get Senator Ringo in here, I think. why don't we start the discussion with the Dash A8 amendment? Let's see, Senator Walker, did you have a chance to describe your A6 yet?
No.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and do that, and then we'll do them in court.
And depending on how we do this, I don't know in what form we can pass this. The A6, I mentioned this yesterday. This is in response to an issue that Senator Beyer and I were working on. We had been informed that mandatory reporters, teachers, had been making their mandatory report about suspected child abuse to one of the sheriff's departments, and that sheriff's department would go contact the abuser and in the process of that reveal the name and identification of the mandatory reporter who then was intimidated and harassed by the abuser. So I looked in the statute and they're not supposed to reveal that information, but they argue with me about it. So we're going to clean that up. I talked to Virginia down in Legislative Council, Virginia Vanderbilt, and the change we will make is, as you see on the first page of the A6, line 9, we're taking out the words "are not accessible for public inspection" and saying "may not be disclosed except as provided in this section." And the other change you see there. And then the other changes make it clear what sections we're talking about, and those sections, Madam Chair, in the statute are duty of officials to report child abuse, and it goes on for a couple of sections there. So we're just making it clear that law enforcement or anyone is not supposed to disclose the name of a mandatory reporter or the identifying information unless as required by the statute. And the statute does not require that to be given to the abuser or the alleged abuser, let's put it that way. So this is the one quick little fix I came up with. I have a meeting later today with some folks to continue talking about this, but this one is a very quick, good fix. And Ms. Vanderbilt was very good about getting this out so quickly and didn't like the way the statute was written anyway, so that's why this is here.
Okay, thank you, Senator Walker. Is there any discussion on Senator Walker's amendment? Let's discuss that with you, Senator Barr. Okay, Why don't we, do you know where Senator Przanski went off to?
Uh-oh, we're herding cats again.
I think we're herding cats. I think everybody is getting away from this bill.
I'm sorry.
I know I could, but they like the bill. So, committee, what I'd like to do is go ahead and adopt the amendments that we have, and then I will commit to you to recommend a non-concurrence on the House side and to get driver's licenses into the bill in conference committee, and I will serve on that committee. And so if that's good enough for you. The alternative would be just to change it into a gut and stuff and send it out for the...
Madam Chair, I don't think just driver's license. For me, that doesn't go far enough. I'm going to oppose the A7s, and you know, if you do that, probably oppose the bill going forward. So.
Okay. All right. So let's, Senator Walker, let's start with a motion on the A7s.
Okay, we'll do that. Madam Chair, I move the A7 to House Bill 2599.
Senator Walker has moved the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2599. Is there any discussion?
No.
Senator
Byer?
That's all right.
No discussion.
Okay, we will take the roll on the A7 amendment.
Senator Byer?
No.
Senator Przanski?
Madam Chair, I'm going to give you a courtesy vote on this based on our understanding of what will happen, so I'll say aye at this time.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr, excused. Chair Burdick?
Aye.
4 ayes, 2 nays, and 1 excuse.
The dash A7 amendment is adopted. Senator Walker, let's take the dash A6, which is yours.
Okay, Madam Chair, I just have a question. We're keeping the bill as originally drafted with this A7, so my A6 should work just fine then. That was just
fine. Yeah, and then we've got one after that.
Okay, great. Then I would move the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 2599.
Senator Walker has moved the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 2599. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker.
Okay.
The next one we have is a dash A5, I believe. Is that
A8.
Correct? A8. Yeah, A8. I apologize.
And these are all working in conjunction with one another?
Yeah, we'll let Legislative Council figure that out.
Okay.
They end up in rules yet.
And Madam Chair, I move the dash A8 amendment to House Bill 2599.
Senator Walker has moved the dash A8 amendment to House Bill 2599. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Byer.
Thank you. Council had said that, we started to say that this has been brought forward as the DOC amendment, but then she said that maybe it's not a DOC amendment. Could we find out whose amendment it is and if does DOC actually want it?
The DOC does want it, but go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Byer, the organization that actually advanced it is, and I'm going to mess up the official title, but it's the Supervising Network of Sex Offenders within the State of Oregon. And so that did include Mr. Taylor from the Department of Corrections. I just was sort of attributing it to the Department of Corrections when it, in fact, is this larger organization that includes community corrections as well. Mr. Schreiner is from Marion County. As you may recall, he and Mr. Taylor both joined in requesting this amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker.
Okay. Are we all done with the amendments, Madam Chair?
Are.
All right. Then I will move House Bill 2599 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2599 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Byer.
Thank you. I'm going to vote against the bill now. I think we had a good bill that came over. The A7 significantly watered the bill down, and I don't support that. And I guess I'll do it now unless there's a notice of minority report if someone else joins me with a no vote and intend to put the bill back to a good bill.
Okay. Thank you. Noted, sir.
Sure.
Senator Przanski.
I'm going to go ahead and give the courtesy vote. I guess one of the things I'm going to ask, I've had a very brief conversation with one of the individuals that works with the utilities to find out exactly what is in fact protected now at the municipal level as compared to these rural. And my goal is to support whatever will give each the greatest protection that we can, and making sure that if it is protected at the municipal level, then the rules, I think, should also have it. And so, not knowing what, now that I hear is possible minority report, if it seems to blend all those together, I reserve the right, I guess, to maybe support the minority report at that time, but definitely will give you the vote now.
I appreciate that. Any other discussion?
I will be voting against the bill.
Oh, I think I just found your co-author on the minority report.
And Madam Chair, I would just indicate if there is a minority report filed, if you would be cognizant of including the other amendments that you have no objection to.
Madam Chair, with an attractive revenue clause like that, there's many things that could go into a bill.
Then I think I better be watching this one very carefully, Senator Byer.
This is the end of session, and I might remind my good colleagues that there are other vehicles available to do some of the things. To accomplish what you're trying to do in the water area, and one of the big challenges here is it's really unclear to me from the testimony and from conversations I've had with my friends in the media what the law actually is in the other areas. So I think that needs looking into. Okay, would you call the roll on the bill? Dale, thank you.
Senator Byer?
No.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr excused. Chair Burdick?
Aye.
4 ayes, 2 nays, and 1 excused.
Okay, that's adopted. Senator Walker, would you like to carry this, or would you rather I carry it?
You know, Madam Chair, you got us into this. I think I'd like you to carry that, and I think this is quite an interesting way to end judiciary day.
You're correct, Senator Walker. Anything we can do around here to have a good time. Okay, now we are going to open a work session on House Bill 2322, Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2322 would expand assault in the first degree to include intentionally or knowingly cause serious physical injury to a child. The bill, as it came over in the A and Gross version, was a child under 13 years of age. However, after hearing testimony on June 6th, I was asked to submit a new amendment. That A2-A2 amendment is before you. If that is adopted, it would lower the victim's age to under 6. So it would be kids 5 and under protected by the law. And it would, because the age of the victim then is so much lower, I went ahead and, after talking with the chair, removed that requirement the defendant be at least 5 years older than the victim, since a person committing the crime would have to be at least 10 years older than the victim before they were even subject to the Measure 11 enhancement.
Okay, thank you. Committee, I asked for this amendment because this is an expansion of Measure 11. I think it's for a worthy cause when you're talking about the most vulnerable children who can't speak for themselves. And so I asked for the amendment to be drafted to only apply to children under 6 years of age. And I think there's a rational dividing line between school-age kids and kids who are not in school and pre-verbal, and most of the examples we had in the testimony were of the 3- and 4-year-old type of kids where they were severely damaged through shaking and other awful things. So would welcome any discussion on this, or we could just go ahead and move the dash to Senator Whitsitt.
Yes, question, please. What is the age limit on the perpetrator here?
Well, the
can that be an 8-year-old child?
No, Council, why don't you address that?
Senator Whitsitt and members of the committee, although as a very technical matter, I think the juvenile department could get involved if a child that's 8 years old perpetrated something like this. A criminal charge would not result from that. Certainly at age 15 is the soonest that a person, a juvenile, can be treated as an adult and be charged with what would be considered a Measure 11 offense. And anything under 15, Measure 11 is not going to come into it at all. It is possible, and I don't want to mislead the committee, a child maybe in that 12 to 14 years of age would have a juvenile delinquency case filed against them, and a juvenile adjudication could result. But as far as what we would consider an adult criminal conviction, 15 years of age is the earliest.
Follow up, please. Then assault in the first degree is not a chargeable offense, to say to a 14-year-old.
Senator Whitsitt, members of the committee, a 14-year-old could be charged with assault in the first degree, but only in the juvenile court system. So ballot measure 11 and that sort of mandatory minimum does not apply to a 14-year-old.
I guess I thought that a 14-year-old could still be charged as an adult, but I don't think Measure 11 would apply. But I think a court still has the authority
Senator Prusansky, it's waiver.
Waive them into adult court.
I would add to the Senator Prusansky, Council, to interrupt Council Moad, but the practice of waiver as a result of the lowering to age 14, Measure 11 eligible, what would otherwise be juvenile offenses, has pretty much made waivers. They're rarely, if ever, applied.
Right.
But it is possible.
Right.
But 14 is the, 12, I only have one more thing. 12, I think, is the magic age by which someone could be committed to OIA. So typically, though, in that range of under 14, we're only talking about juvenile delinquency court, and over 14, if it's a serious enough offense, we're talking about adult court and possibly waiver.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification. I know Mr. O'Leary has practiced in juvenile court. I have not had the opportunity, so thanks for that help, Mr. O'Leary and Senator.
I remember from testimony before.
That's good.
That's nice having two certified smarts.
It certainly is. Okay, any other discussion of the Dash 2 amendment? Okay. Senator Walker, why don't you hazard a motion here?
Okay, Madam Chair, I will move the Dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2322.
Senator Walker has moved the Dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2322. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2322 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2322 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
There was some testimony on this bill where somebody said that we need to pass this law to prevent this kind of abuse, which is an absurd thing to say because it won't prevent it. It will lock people up for a long time when it occurs, but it won't prevent it. And we didn't have any testimony. There was no evidence that it would even act as a deterrent. And I would also note that one of the things this does in expanding the Measure 11, it also changes the mental state to include knowingly. And I think that one of the problems with Measure 11 is that it takes away discretion from the court, and it's a very powerful tool for prosecutors because the defendant and the defense lawyer know that there is no discretion, and that if a guilty verdict comes in, no matter what the circumstances, if a guilty verdict comes in, there's going to be a very long sentence. So in view of all that, I'm going to be opposing the bill. I don't think there's been a demonstration that it will make it safer for the public, and I think these mandatory sentences are not healthy.
I appreciate that, Senator Ringo, and you gave notice of your opinions in the first hearing, so I appreciate that. Is there any other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Whitsitt.
I wonder if counsel could give us a definition of protracted impairment of health.
Council
Moab. Senator Whitsitt and members of the committee, protracted impairment of health, and maybe Council O'Leary has litigated this issue. I have not litigated assault in the first degree issues before, but and serious physical injury issues before, but my understanding of the case law is that it would require something like for impairment of health, I would argue that it would require something like more than probably 6 to 8 weeks of hospitalization. But I would literally have to probably do a quick case law search to really be able to give you a better sense of that. I mean, serious physical injury, it is a high standard of proof. I do know that having worked in a unit that charged vehicular cases, that serious physical injury was an issue on. And I know that the types of injuries that are dealt with in these types of shaken baby syndrome cases that this bill is intended to address were included in the DA's written testimony, and typically it involves an organ that is no longer functional or a comatose or vegetative state.
Okay. Senator Whitsitt?
Do you think, Ms. Maud, that protracted impairment of health could include emotional health?
Senator Whitsitt and members of the committee, because this is serious physical injury and the protracted impairment of health is part of the definition of serious physical injury, I would not believe that it would be extended to mental or emotional distress.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We have people from the DA's office here who had asked for this, so maybe we'll put you on the hot seat if one of you would like to come up. I see you. I know where you are, because that's a good question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Walt Beglaw. I'm the Marion County District Attorney. Did you want me to address the specific questions that were just posed?
Yes, Senator Whitsitt's question in particular, the protracted and whatever.
And then the emotional health. Well, Chair Burdick, Senator Whitsitt, it would not include emotional or mental injury at all. Both these statutes, both physical injury and serious physical injury, relate to damage to the body physically. Basically, and I think the statutes and certain case law reflect that very clearly. Now, this bill relates to basically young children that receive severe blows or injuries to their internal. Most of them we see around the stomach and to the head, your shaken baby types of cases. And the injury there is a protracted injury in the sense that you're seeking medical attention that is necessary over a period of time to sustain their life or maintain the functioning of their bodily organs. And so this is exactly what this is designed to do. And this protracted injury, there's no set time period set for that. It's not defined, as from my memory, in case law. But when you have a child that has a severe head injury, they're immediately going into care in a neurological state. And to sustain the swelling of their brain, medical care is necessary. And that stretches anywhere from a couple days to months to sometimes years. And so we're looking at that. If that is the case, then you've got protracted injury where you're using medical care to sustain their life. So that's the best shot I can give at those particular questions at this point in time. But those are the kinds of kids we're trying to reach with this, and we have quite a few of them.
Is there any case law that gives some more clarification of this?
Madam Chair, there are quite a few cases, actually, that talk about not only physical injury, the basic definitions, and the different factual scenarios for that, but also with serious physical injury. And I can just I wish I could bring you the cases off the top of my head, but there are several of them that talk about, well, what is serious physical injury? What is a bodily organ? What is protracted? And so there are cases out there. I don't have them with me, but and they talk about those different factual scenarios, which is exactly what we do in the law, take the definition and try and apply something that's happened in real life to that situation to come up with the right definition.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Chair Burdick, actually, very little. My legal research consisted of speaking to one of the prosecutors and one of the defense attorneys in the gallery.
Washington County District Attorney's Office. I just wanted to, I know that a couple of years ago, and it's been a couple of years, I specifically researched this issue of protracted, and at the time there was no cases specifically on that issue of how long is protracted, that one question. There's a number of cases on the definition of what is serious physical injury, but there's no statutes on how long specifically, like a number, how long is protracted. I think it depends on a case-by-case basis.
Madam Chair. Would you say that protracted means more than a month?
Chair Burdick, Senator Ringo, I think that since there isn't a statute or a specific case that I think any of us have any knowledge of or recollection, and I honestly don't believe that there's one out there that gives us any specific number, it's going to be up to the prosecutor's discretion of what they believe that to be, in addition to a grand jury agreeing with it, and in addition to a judge or a jury agreeing with it, that would not be, again, it depends on what the injury is and how badly that month impacted your life. If it was a broken bone, then no, probably not. If it was something that required you to be on life support for a month, that might be different depending on how it impacted you during that period of time.
So, well, based upon that, you think then the protracted, there's a connection between the length of time and the seriousness of the injury. If it's a very serious injury, then the time involved might be a shorter period of time.
Chair, Senator Ringo, that's exactly right. And one of the things you're going to use to demonstrate serious physical injury is medical testimony. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be measuring through this testimony and evidence the long-term impact. Best example I can give you is we had a child that was starved over a period of time and then was rescued from that situation and started to recover. Well, there was 6 months where that child had that starvation impact to their body, and then they started to recover. Were there long-term protracted injuries as a result of that, developmental? And so that's what we were measuring with our experts to demonstrate that particular element of long-term impact. That's what you're measuring. If I had a child who had severe head injuries from being shaken severely and it hit my desk and a doctor told me that, I would charge it in 3 days. If they were on life support for 3 days, and then as that child went through that, I would continue to consult with my experts to tell me, do I have long-term impacts from this particular injury? So can I say it in 30 days? 6 days or 6 months? No. We use our evidence to help demonstrate those particular elements.
And Chair, I guess I already said I'm a no, so maybe it doesn't matter, but no. It just makes me less comfortable with having such little definition. I would have been more comfortable if you had said, yeah, protracted. We don't know exactly what it means, but it probably means at least a month. Mm-hmm. So what you said right now, though, is protracted can be as little as 3 days.
Well, Chair Burdick, Senator Ringo, just to be straightforward and honest, I think it's necessary to have that qualitative assessment of different definitions in law. If I were to tell you a certain date, I think that would be a disservice to you and to other prosecutors and defense attorneys trying to examine the elements of criminal offenses. So I have to give you that straightforward response.
No, I appreciate that. I just don't think in these words don't contemplate sort of balancing test that you're articulating.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I want to kind of move a little bit. I like the bill as it came from the House. We've now adopted an A2 amendment, and I don't recall either of you speaking to the A2 amendment. I'd like to get your opinion on that A2 amendment that's already been adopted by the committee.
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, I did have some comments about that. I'd like to I think there needs to be some flexibility. So I was okay coming off of 13 years, and I told our committee that. And I was thinking 10 years would be better, and just a couple of reasons. Just logic. In our Assault 3 statute, there's a provision that creates 10 years for kids to kind of be a benchmark for the vulnerability of kids. Also, we have another statute called Child Neglect 1, Child Neglect 2. When you leave a child unattended in Neglect 2 for a period likely to endanger their health or welfare, it's under the age of 10. So those were just common sense measurements that we currently have to create consistencies in child abuse laws, and 10 seemed like a good number for me when I was re-examining whether we should adjust the number. So that's my response.
Senator Pruszynski, are you done, Senator Ryan?
Yeah, thank you.
Senator Pruszynski.
Madam Chair, I'm comfortable with the bill as it stands now with the amendment, because what I've heard and what I know from my days when I was in the DA's office, we were looking at the cases that were the shaking baby syndrome, and so we are talking about those that are much more vulnerable. We are looking at changing the element of allowing for the raised means of mens res of knowingly, not just intentional. And then regarding the question on the protracted, I looked at the annotations. There's not one that actually talks about the length of time, but what it does talk, it says the jury could properly find serious physical injury where the medical evidence from which the jury could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that the victim's mouth and teeth were bodily organs and that there was protracted loss or impairment of those organs. Again, it doesn't give us a date or a time frame, but it is on a case-by-case basis as to how significant those injuries are to those organs. And I appreciate Walt's candidness as to, looking at, knowing what I've heard as to the testimony, it seems to the age that we're looking at this point seems to fit really for those that are the most vulnerable, the most likely to be injured in this way from this type of physical act of shaking.
Thank you for that on-the-spot research, Senator Pruszynski. Any other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, just a comment. I'm certain that by leaving this so ambiguous and unclear that we're just paving the way for appeals someday, but that's okay.
Just as a response, I would just point out that as far as the serious physical injury definition, we didn't change that by doing this bill, and there is just a huge body of case law out there on
that's
it already.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's
good. Thank you.
Okay. We have the, do we have a motion on the floor on the bill itself, Senator Walker?
Yeah. I don't know if I made that motion. I made a motion on the dash, too, and that passed.
That passed.
I think we were still discussing the amendment.
Oh,
there is? That's the bill.
So we're now in, have you made a motion on the full bill?
Or? Yeah, according to Dale, I have.
All right. But I was wondering where we were having this discussion.
Yeah.
All right, Dale, why don't you call the roll?
Is this on the bill?
This is on the bill.
Bill, as amended with the dash 2.
The dash
8. You were out of the room when we voted on the dash 2.
I understand.
If you vote yes, you're weak on crime.
Senator Beyer, as a courtesy, we can suspend the rules and let you record a no vote on the amendment if you wish.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Call the roll, please.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Senator Pruszynski?
Aye.
Senator Ringo?
Nope.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr, excused. Chair Burdick?
Aye.
5 ayes, 1 nay, and 1 excuse.
Okay. Senate Bill, our House Bill 2322 passes to the Senate floor. Senator Pruszynski, I think I might ask you to carry this as well. We're kind of loading you up here, but
it's quite all right.
Now we will open a work session. I think I'm going to take care of this victim impact for Senator Ringo. House Bill 2227, work session. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2227 would authorize the introduction of victim impact evidence in non-death penalty aggravated murder sentencing proceedings. We first heard testimony on this, on June 6th. We did receive a Dash 1 amendment, and I know that that amendment was intended to address some of the concerns expressed by the committee about the weighing of the evidence or the appropriate weight given to the evidence by a judge when charging the jury with deciding whether or not a defendant should receive the possibility of parole after 30 years. The Dash 1 amendment, as received, I think might arguably do a little bit more. It would remove the language allowing the court to determine what evidence is relevant in these types of cases. It does allow for the introduction of victim impact evidence, but it specifically removes a line about the jury considering all evidence submitted and instead just says that the court shall instruct the jury that if 10 or more agree, then the defendant should get 30 years with possibility of parole. The other thing that it does is it adds this language about creating new provisions, and it adds a Section 2 which establishes an effective date. The proponents of the bill stated and testified that this was a housekeeping measure. I think by adding creating new provisions and an effective date of the bill, that in fact that would be subject to challenge so that cases that are sort of in the hopper now, this victim impact evidence would probably, or at least arguably, by a defense attorney be prohibited from being introduced. So I know Mr. Fessner is here and has had an opportunity to review the amendments. I know Mr. Hummel is here from OCDLA and has had an opportunity to review the amendments, and I'm going to turn it over to smarter people than me.
Counsel, I think committee, I had wanted to at least take a shot at having some kind of balancing test in the amendments. I don't think these amendments do it. I think I'd like to have the discussion focus on the bill as it is, rather than deal with these amendments, because by putting on the effective date, if this is in fact is what has been going on, which Mr. Fessner assures me it is, then by putting on a new effective date, it could cause confusion.
In what way?
Mr. Fessner, why don't you come on up? That these impact statements are being given in these cases anyway.
See that. The concern is, since it's happening now, and if it has this, it could somehow...
Correct.
Yes, yeah. I'm with you on that.
Okay. Are there any other, any more discussion from the committee on these amendments or the bill or questions of Mr. Fessner? Okay, I think, why don't we just go ahead and proceed with the motion, Senator Walker, and see what happens.
Madam Chair, I will move House Bill 2227 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2227 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker, would you like to carry this?
Okay.
Now we will get on to the really fun thing on this agenda today, House Bill 2050.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2050 was a bill we first heard about on May 24th. It would require, as a condition of probation, parole, or post-prison supervision, that certain persons not be allowed to reside within 3 miles of a victim of a crime under certain circumstances. After listening to the committee's concerns and working with Senator Ringo's staff and Representative Barker's staff, I sent some amendments down. Those are reflected in the Dash A3 amendments. One of the things actually that nobody addressed until I was sort of reviewing this for a last time, in the original version of the bill, there was no standard of proof when the defendant is demonstrating, for example, that that no mental intimidation or pressure was brought to bear during the commission of the crime on the victim, or if the defendant demonstrates to the court or supervisory authority or board that the imposition of the condition would deprive that person of a residence that would be materially significant in aiding in the rehabilitation of the person or in the success of their probation, etc. There was no standard of proof in that language, and I thought that we probably wouldn't want to leave that ambiguity and leave the defendant to have a higher burden than would normally be imposed. And so I added preponderance of the evidence in as the standard of proof in that to make sure that was very clear. I also clarified, I recall specifically Senator Prezansky reading the A. Engrossed version and having some questions about the victim in person or in writing or through the victim's representative that could be the DA but could be somebody else, that might lead to some confusion or too many cooks in the kitchen. And so I took out the victim's representative in writing, in person language, and just said the victim, either in person or through the district attorney, could do that. It's my experience that certainly the district attorney consults with the victim and the victim's family on all of these types of issues, and so I thought that was an appropriate way to just sort of clean that piece up. Another concern that was raised was this idea of the victim moving to within 3 miles of the defendant. And interestingly, I got a lot of feedback from a lot of different people on that. I called some DAs and I talked to some members of the committee, Mr. O'Leary, and I talked about it quite a bit as I tried to craft a fair balance, because the DAs that I spoke to said, hey, the defendant's the one who did this in the first place. Tough if he has to move 10 times. And I, didn't think that was probably as fair as we wanted to be. On the other hand, I didn't think that a victim's family ought to be prohibited from, finding their dream home and still wanting that condition to be observed. And so I thought in that particular instance, if the victim moves to within 3 miles of the defendant, the best person to make that decision was going to be the court that originally imposed that condition. And so that is what I did, again, in consultation. And so it now says if at any time during the period of supervision, the victim moves to within 3 miles of the person's residence, the court shall consider any relevant facts in determining whether or not the probationer may remain at that residence or the defendant. And I think by doing that, the court's going to consider such things as whether or not the defendant is a renter or an owner. I think that the initial thing that the court has to consider about a stable residence being materially significant and aiding in the rehabilitation of the offender is going to be considered. If there's evidence that a victim's family is moving time and time and time again in order to chase the defendant around town, certainly a court would be able to see that and would no longer require the defendant to move. So I thought that the court that knew the most about the case ought to be the one making that call in those situations, and that's what I did. There was some discussion about a transitional housing exception, and I did not include specific language about a transitional housing exception because I believe that's covered by the idea that the condition would deprive the person of a residence that would be materially significant in aiding in their rehabilitation. I don't think there's going to be any argument, any successful argument, that a transitional housing that is available for someone who's getting out of prison, for example, versus them being homeless, I just don't see how a court would ever say a transient lifestyle is more rehabilitative than transitional housing. So I did not add that for that reason, and because transitional housing, I think, there's no real statutory definition of what transitional housing is, and I was concerned that might get us into a sticky situation down the line if I put a sign out in front of my home and say, MOAD's transitional housing for sex offenders, and I'm just collecting thousands of dollars in rent and making a fortune. So I didn't include that specific exception because I feel like it's already set up. And I think, the last concern was the idea that the defendant's that it, the victim's address is typically kept confidential. And by imposing this condition, then the defendant would know where the victim lived. And I did a little bit more research on that and had a couple. I didn't address it specifically in these amendments for a couple of reasons. One, these are child victim type cases, minor type cases, and I think that the majority, although certainly not all, but the majority of those types of cases are perpetrated by somebody who develops a level of trust with the victim and the victim's family. Sometimes can be a family member of the victim, and I think they would know more often than not where the victim actually does live. And certainly a victim whose address had been kept confidential may not even request the condition for the very reason that they wouldn't want the defendant to be able to have their home address. So since this is triggered by the request of the victim in the first place, I did not specifically address that. And the final piece was the fiscal impact. Marion County showed up with a 190,000-plus impact statement. Legislative Fiscal has looked at that and has expressed to me that they are going to reevaluate their fiscal impact, but the initial reactions are that it does not violate the constitutional unfunded mandate provisions, and they still needed to do some digging as regarded, I know even this committee was caught off guard by the assertion that a global positioning system program of $50,000 would need to be purchased, for example, and Fiscal wants to do a little bit more investigation into those issues. So, those are your A3 amendments.
That is very comprehensive, counsel. Thank you. Senator Mingo, do you have anything to add?
Well, I do. I had discussed this bill with both Senator Walker and Senator Beyer, and they expressed concern as to the circumstance of the victim moving within 3 miles of the perpetrator. And I said, I think that's a valid concern, and I would request amendments to say in that circumstance, the perpetrator doesn't have to move. Those are the amendments I requested. These don't fit that bill. And I understand counsel's balancing and talking to a lot of folks on this, but I told both Senator Walker and Senator Beyer that I would address that concern because, frankly, I think it is legitimate. And so if they are not comfortable with this language, then I would suggest we just close the hearing and move it to rules so we can get some amendments that fit their concern.
Okay. Senator Beyer, Senator Walker, maybe you can help us.
Yeah. Well, I did read the amendments, and I did notice that was not the way we'd asked it to be
drawn
out.
No, you're right. You're right.
And I still don't think that they should be forced to move. I don't want to leave it up to the judge. It's if the victim chooses to move there. I can't imagine that the victim's dream home would be where a sex offender's living, because they kind of have limited places where they can live unless it's a family member and they went back home to their family. But I would rather have it the way that I had wanted it. What do you think, Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did talk about that, and I appreciate the attempt here. I would prefer to see, you know, right now, I could probably go either way. I could either support the amendment, move to go forward, and then again, a conference committee type work, or go to rules with it. But I agree with Senator Inglis and Senator Walker that I'd rather see just a to say that if the victim chooses to move, as long as the victim and the victim's family knew that they were moving to within 3 miles, then that should not trigger a movement by.
Yeah.
But I'll go either way at the chair's request, either move it to the floor or move it to rules. I don't.
Madam Chair, I'd prefer just moving it to rules.
Okay, we will do that. We will close the work session on House Bill 2050, and we will.
We need to go make a motion.
That's right. We don't know how to close the work session.
It goes like that.
Okay.
Reverse that, what you just did.
You just need to reopen it.
Reopen the work session.
Except change the bill number.
Change the bill number. 2050.
Madam Chair, are we in work session?
No.
We're in work session. We're reopening the work session in 2050.
Okay, thank you. In that event, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2050 be reported without recommendations to passage and the bill be referred to the Senate Rules Committee.
Senator Ringo has moved that House Bill 2050 be recommended without, be moved without recommendation to the Rules Committee. Discussion, objection?
Discussion is only that I truly appreciate Senator Ringo being cognizant of the conference that we had and my concerns, and that he's willing to do that.
We also want to recognize the work that Council did in trying to split the baby.
Yes. Good work was done on all sides. This is a very difficult issue. Any more discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
Yeah, I would. I know that Multnomah County had some issues on this bill, and I'd like to ask them to meet with me so we can talk about those. I don't want ambiguous and shifting objections. I need to know exactly what the objection is, and I would ask that you meet with me right after this hearing and talk about those.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. So ordered, it's moved to rules. Okay. We will open now a... We thought it would be Burley's. We will open a work session on House Bill 2742, and we have the very patient Representative Burley joining us here. I'm sorry, I don't know how long you've been there, but I apologize. Council. That's right. You got to sit right in front in this committee.
Any comments?
I'm always guaranteed to learn something new.
Let's let Council summarize this, and then we can hear from you.
Chair Burdick, House Bill 2742A is the bill that we heard on the 13th, and this would authorize the Department of Transportation to apply for, accept, receive, and disperse grants and donations from the federal government and other sources, which would then be placed into the Safe Routes to Schools Fund. The department would provide assistance to local communities to eliminate, or the money, I should say, would provide assistance to local communities to eliminate hazards or barriers to children walking or biking to and from school. It would include grants, technical assistance, and advice and evaluation of local programs. We heard testimony concerning federal highway reauthorizations in Congress that could loosen up about $2 million annually from the federal government to the Oregon Department of Transportation on this issue. There was, and I believe there still is, a -A2 amendment that was drafted for your consideration that would include the contents of what was Senate Bill 580, but my understanding from Senator Devlin, who had that amendment drawn up, is that he is withdrawing it.
That's my understanding as well. Representative Burley, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Chuck Burley, House District 54, and I don't have anything to add other than what you've heard in previous. I was here to answer questions, particularly about the amendment, if you had any, but since it's been withdrawn.
And I completely confirm that withdrawal.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there questions of Representative Burley? Okay. Move right along. We have a motion, Senator Walker.
Well, Madam Chair, I really wanted the -2 amendment.
Me too.
But I understand that won't be acceptable to our other chambers. So I will not move it, unfortunately. And I will move House Bill 2742 then to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2742 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Okay.
Senator Byer.
Thank you. This is an interesting bill. I think that everything that's in this bill can be done without a bill. And I see now that the bill also has a fiscal of one position of $51,000. This biennium, it's other funds, not general fund, or actually federal funds, but I don't know.
I'll tell you what, Senator Byer, we won't make you carry it.
Okay. I don't think there's a testimony we had. There's nothing in this bill that can't be done without the bill. And it's one of those bills of who cares.
Well, I do admit it was a much better with the
-2
amendment, but...
Well, I'd be opposed to that. I put that in because you couldn't even tell. So please adopt the
-2. Maybe you better stop while you're here, Senator Biden. Okay, is there any other discussion? Thank you. Any objection? So ordered. I'm going to give Senator Devlin an opportunity to carry this bill, if he would like.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, we will finish up with Ms. Moad's agenda here by opening a work session on House Bill 2667.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2667 would expand the definition of sex crime to include public or private indecency if that person had a prior conviction for public or private indecency. We first heard about this on Monday of this week. Mr. Schreiner testified in person and submitted written testimony about why he believed this to be an important bill, an important tool for the Sex Offender Supervision Network.
Excuse me, who did you say was here?
Pat Schreiner.
That's right. Is he in the audience?
I don't see him here, but I have his written testimony if there.
Okay, and
questions.
We have no amendments. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions of counsel on this bill? Okay, Senator Walker.
Let's just...
2667.
I realize that, Madam Chair, and I don't have any notes in my file. I must not have been here for the testimony on this. Can I just ask, this was sponsored by the state, here we go, Heidi, Statewide Sex Offender Supervision Network. That's the official title. Okay, I'm fine. House Bill 2667. Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 2667 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2667 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, would you like to carry that?
Sure.
Okay. Now we'll move into Mr. O'Leary's portfolio here. Well, let's see. Maybe we should do this. Let's take care of this. Oh, these are...
Some here. Scripts for you.
Oh, you know what? We're not quite there yet.
No, we're not.
We have to wait till 2:30. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it?
No. We have to wait till 2:30 to move the things to rules. Okay. No, don't worry. We have plenty to do. Okay. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 591, Council.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 591 is sponsored by Senator Przanski. We heard testimony on the bill on March 14th, and this is the bill that would amend the vehicle code to make clear that the bicycle lane or the part of the roadway where a vehicle stops or stands or parks is not considered a lane adjacent to the lane in which the driver's vehicle is traveling for purposes of the violation of failing to stop for a pedestrian where the pedestrian is in the bicycle lane or part of the road where the vehicle stops, et cetera, et cetera. Senator Przanski hopefully can explain that much better.
I'll give you a little less on it.
We all know what we're talking about. It's just hard to say it. So please try.
We need a picture. We need a diagram.
I'm a visual learner. I really need a map drawn here.
Madam Chair, what this does is basically if you have a parking lane or a bicycle lane, that will be included in the first lane of travel. The problem is that when we passed the bill in 2003, it basically set up lanes, did not identify what a lane included or didn't include. And we've had at least one court in the state that has ruled that on these crosswalks where someone has entered the crosswalk with a motor vehicle in violation of the 2003 rule, that they were not in violation because that road, Highway 101, actually had a bicycle lane. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to do is we're going to say that the bicycle lane is inclusive in the first lane, motor vehicle lane, so you don't count out a bicycle lane separate from the travel lane.
Thank you, and that's very well articulated in the committee. If it sounds a little bit familiar, it's because we already did it. It was part of another bill that made other changes to the pedestrian law, and that bill ran into trouble in the House because of the other provisions, not these provisions. So Senator Przanski has worked out an agreement with the House folks that this one can go ahead and move through and make these changes. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I voted against the other bill that left the committee.
It was the other part that you didn't like.
No, actually, it was this part.
It was this part, Senator Biden.
Because this actually makes people have to sit longer at a crosswalk because this, you know, only going to count the bike lane as a lane.
That's correct.
He's right. So this is the part I didn't like in the other bill.
Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion? Senator Walker.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll give it a whirl. I would move Senate Bill 591 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 591 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation during discussion.
I'll be a no.
Senator Beyer is a no. Why don't you call the roll, Dale? Could be your last time here.
Senator Beyer?
No.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr, excuse me, Chair Burdick?
Aye. Senate Bill 591 is passed. Senator Przanski, you can carry that. You're coming out with quite a work load on this committee today. Okay, it is now 2:29.
Madam Chair?
What, Senator Ringo?
Now before you get that gavel, I want to just thank you again for being a great chair during this legislative session.
Well, we have three more bills to move.
Yeah. Well, then don't hit that gavel yet.
Well, I can't hit the gavel because it's only 2:29, and we have to wait until 2:30 till we can move these other bills to Rules Committee.
Are you doing 2:30?
You can see them again, Charlie.
Did we lose? Did we forget one?
Didn't do it.
No.
Oh, we forgot one.
Did we?
We got one more bill.
Oh, how do we? 2:30.
We will open up a work session.
You have 1 minute, Bill.
On House Bill 2230. But thank you very much, Senator Ringo.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, House Bill 2230A comes to you from the Attorney General, and this is the bill that would define economic damages for purposes of restitution in criminal court. It also redefines the definition of victim for purposes of restitution to include the actual victim of a crime, a third party who has suffered economic damages as a result of the defendant's criminal conduct, the criminal injuries compensation account, and an insurance carrier that has expended monies on behalf of a crime victim. The bill sets up a order of payment among these individuals for restitution purposes. And there is an A2 amendment before you for consideration. What the A2 does is specifically exclude loss of future earning capacity from the definition of economic damages for purposes of restitution. The way that this came about at our hearing was that it was explained to us that currently the restitution statute uses the term pecuniary damages, which includes special damages that a person could recover against a defendant in a civil action. And this bill would change it to economic damages, which is already defined elsewhere, actually in the tort chapter of the ORS. And it was the issue was raised that the only expansion of the current definition would arguably be this issue of loss of future earnings. So the amendment seeks to maintain the status quo, but at the same time give the clarity that the bill intended to give with respect to the definition of restitution and what constitutes restitution.
Thank you for that summary, Council. Committee, I wanted to respond to the Attorney General's desire to kind of clean up the statute without, in this vehicle, expanding the scope of economic damages, and that's what this amendment does. So I feel comfortable with the bill and would welcome any discussion on the Dash A2 amendment. Senator Whitsitt.
The Council could discuss a little further Ms. Guy's concerns about the constitutionality of this expansion.
Chair Burdick, Senator Whitsitt, the argument that Ms. Sky forwarded was that if there was an expansion to a criminal restitution statute, that could trigger a civil right to a jury trial under Article 1, Section 17 of the Oregon Constitution. And the argument that she put forward relied on a Supreme Court case, State versus Hart, from 1985. And in that case, the defendant was convicted of a very serious assault in the first or second degree, and the court imposed, as I recall, it was one of those protracted injury cases, and the court imposed hundreds of thousands of dollars in restitution. Defendant appealed, arguing that he had a jury trial right to the determination of restitution, saying that it was analogous to a civil action. And the court went on in this Hart case, the Supreme Court went on at some length to say that restitution is not civil in nature. It is not a civil action. It is a punitive element. It has a rehabilitative element. It has an accountability element. But the purpose is not necessarily to make the victim whole. And it rejected the defendant's argument over Article 1, Section 17, saying that the civil action is something totally different. When we're talking about criminal restitution, it's really to teach the defendant a lesson and create accountability, and it has the collateral effect of compensating the victim. What Ms. Skye was saying was that in a prior legislative session, the Legislative Assembly has, and since the time of Hart, the Legislative Assembly has passed a statute that takes away the defendant's ability to pay as one of the factors the court can consider in imposing restitution. Hart discussed that issue at some length. That was one of the reasons that the Hart court found that it wasn't like a civil action, was because the court could reduce the amount based on the defendant's ability to pay. That's gone now. And then what Ms. Skye was saying was, if we also expand the definition of what's recoverable to the definition of economic damages, which includes loss of future earnings, that further erosion combined with the taking away of the ability to pay issue makes it a better argument for under Article 1, Section 17 that there's a civil right to a jury trial. Thank you.
Thank you for that explanation. Is there any other question from the committee? Discussion? Okay, Senator Walker, we could use a motion on the Dash 2 amendment.
All right. And Madam Chair, I move the Dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2230.
Senator Walker has moved the Dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2230. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Walker.
House Bill 2230 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2230 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Whitsitt, now that you've been informed, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, now we can do it. Could you hand the script to Senator Walker? Senator Walker, we got scripts, baby.
All right.
Okay.
I'm an actress. Just give it to me.
Okay, on your agenda, Senator Beyer.
The Senate President invoked a one-hour rule today on the floor.
Correct.
So why did you have to wait until after 2:30 to do these three bills?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because mm-hmm. we had to wait. We posted them yesterday at 2:30. And... So we probably could have done it, but...
But didn't you repost this agenda already since the floor session?
Yeah, we did.
It was all the floor session. There was one to get 591 in.
Senator Beyer, I think you're just being argumentative.
Yeah.
We haven't wasted one single minute.
We increased the agenda right before he announced the 1 hour, and as I was walking it down
here. Yeah, I mean, I have
a 30. Okay. I think the way this works here is I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 304. Senator Walker.
All right. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 304A be reported out without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to the Senate Rules Committee.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 304A be reported out without recommendation as to passage and the bill referred to the Senate Rules Committee. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 10.
Did you close the work session?
No, yes. Close the work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1041. Senator Walker.
Senate Bill 1041 be reported out without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to the Senate Rules Committee.
Senator Walker has moved that Senate Bill 1041 be reported out without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to the Senate Rules Committee. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1041. Open a work session on House Bill 3159.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill See, I don't have a script. I'm making this one up. I'm winging it.
No.
I move House Bill 3159A be reported out without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Senate Rules Committee.
Senator Walker has moved House Bill 3159A be reported out without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the Senate Rules Committee. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Committee, we are now at the end of our agenda, I think officially, and we will be reconvening at the call when we are ready to work on the methamphetamine package, which on our end will be Senate Bill 907. I don't expect that to happen until next week at the earliest, and then I presume we'll reconvene again to consider the House version. And I want to thank the committee for a great session. This has been a wonderful committee. I really appreciate it. And Senate Judiciary is adjourned.
Wow.
And staff. Jeez.